I will gavel the committee to order, and I'd like to welcome everyone here today, and thank you all for attending a joint hearing of the House Bioscience and Emerging Technologies and the Senate Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee.
Hey, you got that down pretty good.
Yeah, well, I have it written. but I forgot my reading glasses, so if I make a mistake, you'll just have to give credit to me. We appreciate the invitation to participate in Life Science Alley's conference and expo for the second year. This morning we are focusing on an issue we have spent significant time at the Capitol over the last several sessions on, the availability of capital for emerging companies. We've been grappling with how we can create an environment where small companies have an expanded opportunity to become stronger and to grow faster. Really important for our state and our region. This is especially critical, though, during these challenging economic times. There are two proposals before us today on how we can begin to address this issue, angel investment tax credit and a small business company credit. The angel investment credit has been part of the end of session negotiations during the last several sessions, but has not been enacted. We are working this year to broaden a coalition of support behind the initiative so we can clear that final hurdle. The small business company credit was first introduced last year, but similar proposals have been enacted in other states. And as you will learn this morning, I'm looking forward to learning more about the proposal and how it might facilitate the flow of capital in the state of Minnesota. And I want to remind folks that we have a fairly tight time frame this morning, and we would like to leave plenty of time for questions and discussions. So keep that in mind as you make your comments today. And with that, I'd like to invite Don Gerhardt to the table. Mr. Gerhardt, and I'll let you introduce yourself with your title and all the others.
My name is Don Gerhardt. I'm the CEO of Life Science Alley. Chairman Mahoney, Chairman Metzen, and members of the committee, thank you again for having your hearing on Minnesota's life science industry, and welcome to our annual conference. We really appreciate having you here, and we want to make this an every year appearance and participation, so thank you very much. Today we have nearly 1,500 people. Actually, we have more than 1,500 people, a record crowd from Minnesota, from 25 states and from 9 countries, connecting with each other here in this building. This record attendance is a testament to the vitality of the life science community in Minnesota and the participants, their desire to connect and grow. Life Science Alley represents nearly 600 member organizations that employ over a quarter of a million Minnesota employees. Our members every day develop new ways to save and improve lives. We have asked two of our members to testify today on the importance of the Angel Investment Tax Credit to support new company foundation and job creation in the state. Our state faces an increasingly competitive environment for new company formation, which is absolutely key to job growth. An Angel Investment Tax Credit is a proven tool to increase new company formation, and the costs of this to the state are only borne when a new angel investment is made. This is a prudent, cost-effective job creation tool for these tough economic times. So we appreciate the continued support of committee members and the governor of this and other measures. So again, thank you for holding this hearing and welcome. We really appreciate your attendance here.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardt.
Thank you.
I think next on the agenda is Jeremy Lenz from the BioBusiness Alliance.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney, Chair Metzen, Senators, Representatives. My name is Jeremy Lenz. I'm with the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota. I will not take much of your time this morning. I just wanted to set a little bit of context in regards to the work that is coming up, as well as work that we've already done, as you have the conversations this morning in regards to the programs that are in front of you. Last year, Dale Wallstrom, our CEO, walked you through this, and I will not do that again this morning. We'll do that a couple times during the session.
Dave?
you like that? What we wanted to do, though, is tee up two things. One is Destination 2025, which is the 20-year visioning process that's going to be looking at the six main industries in Minnesota in the bioscience industry. That report is coming out in the end of January. We're working closely with Chair Mahoney in regards to the results of that, and we will be coming before you multiple times during session on that regard. The other thing that we wanted to do is I wanted to pick on Representative Dabney in regards to a memo that he has, which is in front of you. You have a little icon that shows BioMap on it. And what we wanted to do is to be able to help you set context in regards to what businesses might be in your district that you can take a look at. And if you go to our website, you can look on this icon, and what you would get is a report similar to what Representative Dabney has, which shows three companies, I think, for your district that are representative of the bioscience industry. And so you can search not only by your legislative district, Senate or representative district, but you can also house district, but you can also look at cities and counties as well. And so as you're listening today to the companies that might be impacted by these tax credits, by these programs, we wanted to make sure that you could personalize it and understand who might be impacted directly, so you can go and do some research on this for yourself. We'll be following up with you with a memo that outlines for each of your districts the information. But we just wanted to help set context to personalize this for you today. So that's all I have today. We'll be talking to you more during the session. Thanks again for taking the time this morning.
I actually have one question.
Yes,
with that matrix that you have,
yes, sir.
Could you tell us which one of us at the table has the most bio people working in their district?
Wow.
Does he know where we...
I think it'd probably be her.
I'll say I concur, but we'll double check for you.
Thank you. Actually, I think next on the agenda is Brian Walters from Fargo. Actually, from Moorhead, Fargo-Moorhead Economic Development. I better make sure we have a Minnesotan testifying in front of the Minnesota House and Senate.
Thank you
for coming today, Mr. Walters.
You're welcome. Thank you for the invitation to attend the meeting, Mr. Chairman Mahoney, Chairman Metzen, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to join you today. For today's event, we'll call it the Moorhead Fargo Economic Development Corporation. I want to just address maybe why I was asked to speak with you today. And although I'm not a total expert, I would say, in the capital markets, I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. So I was asked really to bring more of a greater Minnesota, I guess, perspective and a local economic development perspective as we end up on the front lines working a lot with the businesses that are expanding, relocating, or looking to start in our state and in our region. How we ended up on this path was through economic strategy development that we had gone through. And if you've seen the movie Men in Black, and where there's the memory flash thing, basically in terms of the times that we're in nationally and globally, kind of economy that we're in, everything I was taught in graduate school about economic development and what drove corporate investment, we had to basically flash our own memory and relearn the tools of our trade. And one of the tools that fortunately we're able to talk about today is seed capital tax credits. So much of economic development policy has been developed through the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. A lot hasn't been changed, and a lot in terms of what the economy is doing, what the world's doing. Competitiveness issues have changed, and a lot of policy hasn't. So it's a pleasure to be able to talk about the really leading policy developments that should fuel tomorrow's companies, create tomorrow's jobs, all of which pay tomorrow's taxes. So we ended up on this looking through economic analysis, what sectors were leading the country in growth. So we wanted to target sectors for economic development policy locally and regionally and within our two states to say what sectors are growing, which sectors are paying high wages. And we trimmed 9 broad wealth-creating sectors down to 3, all that happened to have a technology flavor. And we've had some success in those arenas, but not to the extent that other markets in the coasts have. So we formed around information technology, life sciences, physical sciences, looked at the geographies that had a lot of success, created a lot of jobs. Unfortunately for us, I think attracted a lot of our workers to their states to work these jobs. And the characteristics of their economies were such that, yes, it was traditional business recruitment, yes, it was traditional support of existing businesses, but a lot of what made Austin who Austin, Texas is was entrepreneurism. So we ended up forming a fourth group, a task force, looking at entrepreneurism and all the related issues so that we can better support, encourage the launch of startup companies, especially those that create high-paying jobs, and encourage their success and not export a lot of that technology and a lot of that talent. Of course, one of those key issues is access to capital. You can't talk about entrepreneurship or business startups very long and without ending up in a conversation about access to capital. And I'm going to break what our work was down into a couple stages here, three stages, in fact, of capital formation to launch these companies. One is pre-seed, and that's founders, friends, family, and it tends to be the $25,000 to $100,000 when they have an idea that entrepreneur is looking at the possibilities and maybe doing some discovery work. They pretty much have to do that on their own dime or whatever they can talk out of their families and friends. What we're talking about today would be considered maybe angel investor with seed capital area. Angel investors tend to be high net worth individuals who have maybe some entrepreneurial or professional background themselves and interested in making money, launching tomorrow's companies, playing a little bit of a role in society to encourage and nurture these entrepreneurs. They tend to play in the $100,000 to $1 million range. And so that's a critical range to address as individual investors like to get in, dig in, understand the technology, understand the management expertise, do gut check, maybe get a few of their friends. And that's how they fund and launch these companies. The second group under seed stage I would consider angel groups, which would be maybe a second stage and a little bit bigger deal, say $1 million to $2 million range. Beyond that, a lot of people, you know, talk about venture capitalists. They tend to look at later stage and bigger amounts of money. They want less risk. They take more risk, obviously, than banks, but still look for less risk than what the angel investor would be willing to tolerate, and want much bigger deals. So the angel investors are an integral part of our capital markets. It's something that we haven't addressed adequately, I would say, in the state of Minnesota. If we want to launch these companies, we want to launch them here, not on the East Coast or West Coast. The capital's got to follow the technology and do that here. Entrepreneurs and professionals, in terms of why I think in addition to funds, we should look at individual investors. The money's one thing, but the mentorship, the guidance that these individuals tend to bring these startups is another. And I think we should be looking at both encouraging individual investors as well as funds to be formulating, I guess, around the ideas that we have different sizes and needs, and that guidance and mentoring role is critically important in establishing that network. A couple examples of companies that were funded with angel money: Google, Yahoo, Amazon, Starbucks, all would not exist if it were not for angel investors. Locally in Fargo-Moorhead, Great Plains Software was formed that way, which is now Microsoft, which now employs 1,400 people in our community, a lot of Minnesotans including. And then a company called B-Trends. B-Trends is a software company that was started by a former Moorhead City Council member who ended up giving up his council spot because as he was looking to form capital to launch his company, he was not able to find that in the state of Minnesota. And because North Dakota had legislation that started in 2002 that started to build out that network, he was able to find capital on the other side of the river. But, of course, the geographic parameters that you'll consider today are in place in North Dakota, and he had to put his business address in North Dakota. And that was still good for our community, good for, because he still lives in Moorhead, he still lives in Minnesota, created 40 jobs, sold it to a company in Georgia, had his exit. It was a great story, but you see the challenge of that we have in Minnesota about keeping this talent, keeping these companies in our state. We need to have the financing available here, or we'll export them other places. So as we consider this policy, I want to thank you for taking a look at this and for your consideration. This will, again, launch tomorrow's companies, tomorrow's jobs, tomorrow's taxpayers. It'll ensure that we commercialize the technologies that we're working so hard to discover here, and we do that locally. That creates a tremendous amount of wealth, not just in the payroll and the taxes paid by the companies, but the individual investors that get in and get out tend to make a lot of money when they hit home runs. And they fail half the time, which is why we need to mitigate some risk with policy. But when they make money, it expands in terms of all the next generation projects they'll fund and all the other societal sort of giving that these individuals tend to do. The incentive is necessary because it's, again, it's a tremendous amount of risk that these individuals take. That's why the banks don't do it. That's why the venture capitals don't do it. It generates a tremendous amount of awareness if you do policy. It can help us build that network and people. There's a lot of angel investors sitting in every community in the state of Minnesota. Just haven't been asked or haven't thought of it, haven't thought of that way to give back to their community or to the economy. As the performance of the stock market has been absolutely dismal, that money gets tighter, and the incentive helps put some of that money forward. And finally, the conservative nature of our population. We're heavily Scandinavian, as we all know. We're less inclined, probably, than many parts of the country to do this to begin with. So an incentive, again, is a good thing to get that money into the businesses and create jobs. A final thing that I ask you to consider is that we do this, if we do this, so that we do it for only wealth-generating companies and companies that pay high wages. That shrinks, of course, as you have the budget situation you have and you're looking at the fiscal note and potential effects of this. The way to trim that down is to zero in, put it to its highest and best use. I'd also encourage you to consider all sectors that create high-paying jobs in the state of Minnesota. And I just see no need, really, to limit this geographically. These angel investors like to make investments at home. They make their gut check. They like to see it, watch it. There's money sitting in all cities in the state of Minnesota, and I really don't think that there needs to be a geographic restriction placed on your proposal. So I appreciate, again, your time, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have of me.
Are there any questions? I have one. I mean, I think I heard it in your prepared remarks, but when you say no need for geographic, you mean how about industry specific also? Because I know that's been bantered about last year and this year.
Well, to address the industry first, and our analysis, we looked at just where the job creation was happening. And if it's medical devices, if it's vaccines, if it's software, if it's cellulosic ethanol technologies, to me it doesn't matter. If we're contemplating economic policy, we should let economic drivers provide the parameters of that policy. And if as long as the companies can create jobs, high-paying jobs, and create wealth for the state of Minnesota, I don't see a need to limit the economic sectors. Geographically, we've had a great amount of success in Fargo and on the North Dakota side in developing that angel network, and we've done it in a short period of time. This legislation came in place in 2002, and we had a couple things that helped us. One, Microsoft went public and made millionaires out of a lot of people in our region, including Minnesotans again. So one, there was awareness that there's an opportunity to make a lot of money. And two, we came out with the incentive that mitigated 45% of their investment at risk in the form of tax credits. So it put a lot of money out there really quickly. One advantage that we have, again, there's money sitting in every town. An advantage we might have over Minneapolis, St. Paul is we know everybody. And that establishing that network was easy. And they all know a lot of what the individual investors do. If one goes in, three of their friends go in as well. So I think that the money likes to stay home, likes to invest locally. And I think what's good policy for one county is good policy for another. And, again, I think it should be driven by economic standards. So I think sitting in greater Minnesota, it doesn't concern me if there's geographic. I prefer lack of geographic restrictions on any policy that you do.
Representative Bunn?
Yes, I wanted to ask about the issue. We're going to look at some new proposals today modeled after some things that are being done in some other states that are kind of more recent development in terms of possible incentives for angel investors or creating pools. But among the, I know an individual who has a high-tech nanotechnology startup firm in Oakdale who's about to move to Wisconsin. When they looked at having a larger facility, there was just no comparison to them in terms of Wisconsin offered them some state-level incentives, some regional economic incentives, and the city that they moved to offered them an incentive package as well. So the combination of three was just completely beyond what they would be receiving in the East Metro here in terms of making it attractive to them. And so this is exactly the kind of firm we would like to keep here. Among our more traditional economic development tools, either in your comparison with Minnesota or North Dakota, or Minnesota to Wisconsin or Iowa or our neighboring states, where are we possibly not performing as well or have or have a more limited toolbox than our neighboring states?
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. That's pretty loaded for me. Because
we don't ask those kind of questions.
the Wisconsin border, if you prefer. So.
I prefer the tough questions go to Mr. Lenz. I think we're at that position again where we have a lot of legacy policy that we've developed over the years. It was very good for the time. And I think this is true of every state in the country. I think as we look at where the sectors are creating jobs, the kind of jobs we expect to create, what we've lost to the coasts, what we've seen happen in Texas, and the benchmarking and policy that's driven that, I think we're behind overall in the Midwest. And I think it's a time to say, especially when we have a situation of the deficit, that we look at existing policy and we say, you know, it's time for an overhaul. We want different companies, different jobs. We have policies that we put in place 20 years ago, and we want it to do something it wasn't built to do. And so I think I appreciate your sentiment that there's no silver bullet, there's no single bullet, and we should look at it comprehensively to say, here's the kinds of companies that we want to lead the economy or need to lead the economy for the state of Minnesota in the future. Here's a comprehensive package of policy that will deliver that. So it's research and development tax credits, it's seed capital tax credits, target investments in research capacity at our universities with higher education. It's all that. So I appreciate your sentiment, and I think we should look at everything.
Seeing no other questions, thank you, Mr. Walters. And,
thank you.
I think we have some brief remarks from Chris. I'm going to really slaughter this last name.
It's Heisinger.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, being blessed with a last name like that has caused me to have to answer that question more than a few times. So, again, my name is Chris Heisinger. I'm Director of Business Development for Life Science Innovations based out of Wilmer, Minnesota. And maybe to start, what I'll do, just because I don't know the committee's background as far as familiarity with our organization, is give you a very quick overview of our company. Life Science Innovations is a holding company that represents business interests in agriculture, biotechnology, engineering, and computer science, all based out of the Wilmer area, and their roots come out of Wilmer Poultry Company. Back in 1945, my great-grandfather and his business partner, Alban Norling, started Wilmer Poultry Company to sell turkey poults, day-old turkeys. And what they realized fairly early on is that that's a commodity. And in order to differentiate that commodity, they did a lot of research and development. Well, 60 years of research and development has created lots of great ideas and, in turn, has created lots of good companies. All told, now Life Science Innovations represents about 17 businesses in these varying industries and varying areas. So that's just a real quick snippet, and I know we've got limited time. So just to give you some familiarity for our company, given my agricultural background, I kind of took that in perspective in looking at the opportunities I presented here. And as Brian was representing the public side of this opportunity, the opportunities we're trying to create, I look at my role here as more representing the corporate side, the business side of what's happening here, and what I see and where I see opportunities where this could benefit or detract from our business. And just as sort of a perspective or delay some perspective around that, given my agricultural background, the first thing I thought of is this is very similar to a farmer. And the greatest investment that a typical land farmer makes is in his seed. It's not the combine he drives, not the tractor he drives, not the plow he's pulling behind that tractor. It's the seed that he puts in the ground. And these companies, these small startup emerging businesses, really are that seed for our state. And it doesn't happen in a vacuum. The farmer makes an investment. He cultivates. He weeds. He takes good care of that in order to create new opportunities, new businesses for him to harvest at a later date. In our experience, one of our businesses is the MinWest Technology Campus located in Wilmer. It was the former state hospital. We spent nearly $10 million now in converting that, and it's the largest privately owned technology campus in the country. We've got over 100 acres and 500,000 square feet of existing building space. And during developing that investment, one of the things we've recognized is there are opportunities to bring businesses to Minnesota everywhere. We're experiencing it firsthand every day. In fact, just off the top of my head this morning, I recognize that there is one business based out of Michigan that's eagerly looking to come to Minnesota. I got a business in South Dakota, a business in Wyoming, and two businesses based out of Sweden, all of which are very eager to come to Minnesota, locate themselves in Willmar on our campus, and work alongside or in most cases with our existing businesses. But really are inhibited largely because of the opportunity cost of making that move. And so a tax credit incentive or an incentive, some other way to incent investment by local businesses is really needed, and I think this is some of the efforts that you guys are making are really a strong statement and a good step in that direction. From the business perspective, one of the things that we really, I guess I'd encourage you guys to do in looking at the legislation that's been put forth or the concepts that have been put forth at this point, one of the things I'd really encourage you to do is try to keep it simple. One of the first things that a business evaluates when they're looking at any opportunity is opportunity cost. And opportunity cost comes in many ways, shapes, and forms. Some of it's financial, but some of it's time. Time is really our greatest asset. And in looking at the complexities or the difficulties or the challenges in participating in a particular program, in many cases at a CEO or a board level will eliminate that opportunity before it really gets fair consideration just by the sheer complexity of it. And so I'd really, really encourage you to keep it as simple as possible from a business perspective. Similar to what Jeremy said, I do think location stipulations are counterproductive. I don't think they're necessary. Sure, I'd love to say, yeah, stipulate that all the investment goes into Willmar. That'd be fantastic. I don't think that's reasonable. And I'd much rather see a situation where everyone has the same opportunity to play on a level playing field. We feel that our businesses in Willmar and other businesses across the state, across the region, are able to compete. And so it doesn't really matter location. I think the state's already done a very good job with some of the other opportunities, JobZ, some of those other programs, to level that playing field for us. And so we feel very, very good about that. Minimums, maximums, wage requirements, all of these other complexities. I see a purpose in having accountability, but again, try to make it simple. If there's a way to hold a business, say we want to see X metric. This is what we're trying to achieve. We want you to achieve this metrics, whether it's bring a business in, whether it's create high-paying jobs, pick a very specific target goal and work around that without all the additional encumbrances. In looking at the tax incentives themselves, tax credits, as a business, the way we look at those is really, especially in investing in an emerging company, of course there's different situations, but in this specific instance, the way we view those is really as a way to mitigate the risk that's associated with those emerging businesses. When I was in the banking world, we'd often associate a certain additional amount of interest to higher risk investments. So you'd start with your base prime investment, your prime opportunity, and then you would add a certain amount of risk capital on top of that. Well, in this situation, instead of us looking at an emerging business and saying, geez, we need you to return 18% return on capital or an internal rate of return on your business, we're able to offset that by saying, well, you're going to generate X return over 5 years, but because we're able to recuperate some of that in the form of tax credits, we see that as being equal to you're producing that rate of return within the business. And so this is really, in our mind, defraying the risk, offsetting that risk. One of the things that concerns me a little bit, kind of back to the complexity issue, is looking at who can participate in the program. Our business is at its top level, an S corporation. We invest in many small businesses. We have over the years and continue to help grow our portfolio of businesses and create places where there's synergy between the business we're investing in and our own business, create better business opportunities. And it was difficult for me to interpret whether or not we'd be able to participate in any of the plans that are put forward so far. And I think that would be a real mistake if corporations were left out of the mix, or businesses in general were left out of the mix, because I think there's a lot of deep pockets out there, a lot of eager investors looking for opportunities, and if we can create those opportunities through businesses, I just see it's tough times out there. I mean, I think we all are experiencing that, and it's hard to raise capital. Every business I talked to said, you know, the venture capital markets dried up. There was two IPOs this year, so the capital markets are shot. Where do you go to find investment capital? And I just hate to see us hamstring ourselves or limit ourselves by not making this available to corporations. And I think that's very important to keep in mind.
That's a good point.
Within that, do you guys have any questions? Anything you'd like me to specifically address?
Any questions from the committee? Otherwise, I think I will say thank you very much. I look forward to speaking to you a little later on this afternoon.
Great.
Throughout the day. And you'll be around, so any of the members?
Absolutely. Certainly. If anyone would like to talk, I'm more than happy to be available.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, we have about 45 minutes, and I would typically like to introduce ourselves, so if we could take a quick second to our names and our titles and for the audience, and we'll start with my good friend from the Iron Range.
I'm David Tomasoni. I'm a state senator from Chisholm, and I'm chair of the Economic Development Finance Division in the Senate.
I'm Terry Bonoff, state senator from Minnetonka, Plymouth, and Medicine Lake.
Linda Scheid, state senator from Brooklyn Park, and I represent Brooklyn Center as well, and I chair the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, and also serve on the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee, chaired by Senator Metzen.
I'm Ryan Winkler, state representative from Golden Valley and St. Louis Park, and I don't chair anything.
Sorry. I am Julie Bunn, state representative from the East Master of Communities that run from Stillwater, the north, down to Woodbury and some of the river towns, and I serve as a member of the Bioscience and Emerging Technologies Committee.
Kim Norton, I represent half of Rochester, and I'm vice chair of the Bioscience Committee, and also serve on Higher Ed Workforce Development.
I am Representative Tim Mahoney, and I chair this particular committee, the Biosciences, and I represent the east side of St. Paul.
Senator Jim Metzen from South St. Paul. I chair the Senate Business and Industry and Jobs Committee. I have to read that because it's a long
titles, you know. We all like them.
And I'm Kathy Saltzman. I serve as vice chair to this committee. I represent Woodbury, Stillwater, Lake Elmo.
And I'm Larry Buzz. I represent St. Paul. Stearns County, and I'd like to tell you that in Stearns County, one out of every five cows that live in Minnesota lives in Stearns County.
It's always hard to follow. Representative Jim Daphne, I represent our South Minneapolis, Minnesota House. I'm not a member of the committee, but I've carried the tax credit, Angle Investor tax credit, for the last couple of years. I'm John Burns from WISDA. I'm being an intelligent member of the chair calls and hey, I'm here. So.
Good morning, I'm Mike Beard, the state representative representing Shawnee, Fire Lake, and House representative. And I have been for the last 2 years a ranking Republican on the House Biosciences and Emerging Technology Committee.
Thank you, members, and I will extend my grateful. It was a pleasure to serve with you, John, and I am. Sorry to see you go, but we all have other things to do with our lives, I guess, and you've chosen to move on. So thank you for
Mr. Chair,
spending it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paz, are there more cows than people in that county?
Representative Daphne, did you want to
follow it?
Senator Seltzman, would you care to join Representative Daphne at the table?
Did you ship those to South St. Paul?
Daphne, Senator Saltzman, thank you for presenting your bill today. I'm sure you'll introduce this in the Capitol, and Chairman Metzen and myself will, I may not hear it again after this because Representative Lencheski may grab it right away. But with that...
We'll take a look at it. Of course, we have to move it forward.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney. Good morning, Chair Metzen and members of the committee. Before you in your packets is someone very nice put together a rather elaborate... Mr. Loftus, there we go. I believe this would be called a matrix, I'm not sure. Comparing and contrasting the different proposals that have been put forward the past several years and more recently by Governor Pawlenty, looking at this same area of angel investing and supporting small businesses and emerging small businesses. I have been had the pleasure to work with folks in Bioscience Alley the last several years on this area and have come to believe that this is a critical missing piece of Minnesota's economic development puzzle. What we have been for years is an innovator in the healthcare and bioscience field. And I guess one of my beliefs is as a state and maybe as individuals, we need to build on our strengths. And if we're not building on our strengths, we're going to watch them as we have leach away. Today, Minnesota is lagging in commercializing the products of the research done here, and we are losing bioscience jobs. We've seen early-stage investments decline in Minnesota to a point where they are now below the national average. When we look nationally, we see that venture capital firms are leaving this early-stage investing and going towards later stages of the business. As I've heard numerous times, it's easier to get several million dollars later than it is to get a few hundred thousand dollars now. But if these emerging business concepts don't get that few hundred thousand now, they won't be around to get the several million later and move them forward. What the U.S. Department of Commerce has talked about is that we've got a market failure in the area of early stage financing. I've come to believe very strongly that angel investing tax credits can help fill that void and do so in ways, as previous testifiers have talked about, that strengthen not just the state economy but local regional economies, even without a regional stipulation to the legislation. With that, I think I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and thank you very much, and welcome, committee. It is great to be here today. And you know, later today, there will be hearings at the Capitol to deal with a daunting budget deficit. And that gives us an opportunity in these committees to look at what is our role in really solving this issue, and that is how are we going to grow jobs in Minnesota. And we have been incredibly successful over the past few decades, and we think of ourselves as innovators. And yet, if we don't address the funding gap, we are going to lose our competitive edge. Now, I want to just refer to this funding gap. As Representative Dabney, you know, has mentioned, we have money for basic research. We have money once we have ideas that are successful. But between that, we have, call it a funding gap, a chasm of innovation. It's sometimes referred to as the valley of death. It's referred to as bridge funding. But if we don't allow companies some way and address the need for seed capital, we are really going to have a challenge. So the angel investor program that you see here is really going to address how we can encourage investors to really take that risk. And when you look at what other states are doing, they look to Minnesota, they see the innovation here. We still have that edge of where we are doing incredible research here. But other states are coming here, and other companies are coming here and plucking out our most successful people because they have the funds to do that. So in looking at an angel investor program, it really sends a message that government is going to step up to help stimulate the economy. Ears perk up in that it really helps to lower the risk for investors. We need to be very careful, though, because these are taxpayer dollars that, you know, companies are certified. The proposals that we have in both House File 3149 and 3143, which is Representative Winkler's bill and then Senate File 3083 really is a broader bill that does not target specific industries, but basically, you know, the biosciences, agriculture. There are some specific companies that are not qualified. We will probably be tweaking the bill a little bit. From last year, we have talked to Wisconsin. They have Act 255, which has been very successful. But it's time for Minnesota to look at what can we do to support our emerging businesses. Because if we don't take a wake-up call and look at what is happening across our state, we are really going to lose our ability to contribute to an economic recovery in our state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Saltzman, Representative Dabney, we do have problems right now in the business community, particularly small business in my district. Mm-hmm. I have people coming to me who have gotten capital. They have been small businesses. Some have gotten it from, say, an SBA loan, initial investments, only now their sales have turned because of the economy, and so they are losing the capital they mm-hmm. have. And I think that we're going to find this is an even more critical problem than startups during this mm-hmm. time, because what we're dealing with is there were better times, capital was freer, and so they took advantage of it. But now when they aren't meeting the terms of the deals that they have struck, their notes are being called and mm-hmm. their capital is drying up. And so I don't know if you have thought that through with regard to your current legislation, but I think to prevent layoffs, to prevent bankruptcy, we're going to have to address this middle point where we're not talking about initial, but, you know, if you look at startups, the first 5 years is the most precarious, and it's not year one. It could be year four, or in these tough times, it could be year six. And so, you know, what can we do as a legislature, as a state, to help during these tough times keep people in business.
There, and to that point, Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think that we need to create a roadmap, as Senator Metzen and I have talked about, is this is part of a greater plan. I think the one thing to think about with the tax credits is that no credits are made unless investments are made. And we've also looked at, you know, delaying when the tax credits are then available. It doesn't necessarily have to be that year. It could be delayed for 3 years. That then the money is in and new jobs are then created, which I think in the long term, we grow the economy. It helps our existing businesses as well. So this is a piece of a larger plan, and it really does address these emerging companies that really are the jobs of the future. When you talk about tech-based economic development, this is their time. When you think about the economy and the opportunities that we have in Minnesota and build on the strengths we have, both within, you know, our medical device industry, but also in emerging green jobs, is how can we help them be able to be successful and startup capital. And sometimes, as we talked about as well, it's not a lot of money to move to the next stage, but that's where they're finding the funding gap. So again, it's part of a larger roadmap.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So Senator Saltzman, because one of my concerns was knowing the tax target of not presenting any proposals mm-hmm. that will cost us money during these tough mm-hmm. times. So part of your solution is to postpone the tax credit to our state?
To follow up, up through to bottom, we have looked at that in some states you delay the tax credit. So the money has to stay in the fund and really help the business grow. That's not a gimmick, but it's basically to say, let's make these dollars work and that jobs are then created so that, you know, people are paying taxes on these wages, which is building the economy. So that is one option to look at.
Just to, Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, to reinforce much of what Senator Saltzman said, I spoke over the weekend to a banker in my district who works exclusively with small business lending, and he raised to me very clearly the difficulty in lending to small businesses. Even SBA loans are increasingly difficult to get. I don't think the state can do much on the national and international credit market. What we can do is try to incent business activity here in Minnesota and then look to, as well, the new federal administration that's coming in that seems to be taking an aggressive stance towards restructuring activity in the economy and building a base, stronger base than we are experiencing currently. And hopefully those elements together, hand in hand, can be part of the picture to restart the economy.
Members, in the sense of time, could if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to call up Mark Loftus from Deeb to kind of give a little talk on what the governor's proposed so far. Mr. Loftus, I guess, identify yourself for the tape. I haven't said that to anyone so far, but I'm going to start with you, I guess.
Thank you, Chairman Mahoney, Chairman Metzen, members of the committee. My name is Mark Loftus. I'm Director of Business and Community Development at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The governor has proposed in his announcement a couple of weeks ago two tax credit programs. The first one is the Angel Credit Program, also known as the Job Creation Program. The second will be discussed in the following segment. But if I could just say for a moment, the summary that you received, this legal-sized summary, we prepared that, and I should actually credit Jeff Nelson, our staff person, who put that together. It was his initiative to do that. And what it underscored is the fact that there is a lot of good discussion already in place that we didn't originate in the administration. There was a lot of discussion last session and the year before on the role of tax credits and angel investment. And we've prepared this and provided this to you as a kind of as an overture to say that there's a lot of common ground on tax credits, and the Minnesota is lagging in that. We have not gotten where we should be with other states. So that's the point of the governor's proposal, is to help us get there. As you've seen the proposal, we are proposing a $20 million tax credit program. That would be based on a 25% tax credit per individual, up to $250,000 per individual, up to $1 million per fund. And with that 25% tax credit, you could generate over time a total investment pool of $80 million. So that's a large impact. As these proposals have rolled out in the past, I think there's a couple of differences and a couple of nuances that I want to share with you. Last year, the governor, as you know, proposed in the SEED program a $3 million tax credit proposal like this. I think that last year we looked at that as a kind of a pilot, if you will. And as we reflect on the history of these programs, we recognize that we're kind of beyond the pilot phase. We know that angel tax credits work. They worked in many states. And so that's yields the $20 million tax credit proposal this year, much bigger than the governor had proposed last year. We have also proposed that the operation of this fund, of this program, occur through regional funds, small regional funds. I know there is some discussion about that, whether it should be for individuals as sole investors to get the tax credit, or whether that should go through funds. We've been very impressed by the model of the Rainsource Capital Group and how they help assemble investors. There are a lot of high net worth investors all over the state, not just in metro areas or cities. And trying to assemble those funds, they've been very successful. Half of their funds have been in small rural areas. So we have proposed the fund concept and also trying to have geographic balance across the state, too. We would hope that these funds would not only occur in the metropolitan area or the large cities, but across the state. We have also, as you have understood, in the proposal focused on green jobs, green technology. And I will be the first to admit that the definition of what is a green job is a very challenging one. You can define it in some ways, but then it kind of gets fuzzy on the borders of that. And the governor is saying in the proposal that green technology is an opportunity for Minnesota to be not just a national, but a world leader in helping us get beyond the greenhouse gas issues that we're facing now and help Minnesota lead in developing technology and companies and businesses that are around an enhanced environmental response to the issues that we face. So, oh yes, as proposed, we would the tax credits would not hit the state's budget until the first year, 2013, and that would it would seem as an artificial way to get beyond the current budget deficit, but in fact, as you look at the implementation of a tax credit, you want the tax credit to induce the investment as soon as you can, and you would like to be able to defer that as long as you can defer it. So rather than say you make an investment this year, you get a tax credit this year, well, if we can get the investment to occur by deferring it, it's all to the better for all of us. So the present value of the state's return is incredibly enhanced by doing that. So that's a component of both this proposal and also the subsequent one that we'll discuss. So, Mr. Chairman, those are some quick thoughts on the proposal. Be happy to take questions or comments.
The first one I noticed was Representative Beard, so I will go with Mr. Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To allow us the moving the tax credits out of the year for investment now. I noticed in one of the PowerPoint presentations, and I'm sorry if it's been presented, I missed it, but several other states have pilot programs like this. Are they doing the same thing? Is that working okay? Is it still enough incentive to attract money now for our credit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, the experience, I can't speak to that in terms of this angel program. The Rain Source folks who may testify today would say that we've asked them that question, and they think that can induce the investment. With the second proposal, the insurance company-based premium tax credit, the experience generally in those states and the proposal has been that would be as many as 5 years out. We aren't proposing to go that far out. But I think in both cases, we think that there is evidence that it will occur.
Mr.
Chairman, Mr. Blatt, how does this fit in with Job Z?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, the governor had also proposed a green Job Z program, which would be not only Greater Minnesota, but also in the Twin Cities, not focusing on the distressed community aspect of a Job Z program, but trying to encourage technology development, especially in green technology. This could complement this, could complement the investments. As you note, we also have proposed, the governor proposed the Minnesota Cup competition. So we kind of look at this as a continuum of opportunity for new companies and new ideas. A company, for instance, could go through the Minnesota Cup competition, survive that, and with a quality business plan, they move into the early stage capital programs, and then hopefully get to the later stage investments where a Job Z or a Minnesota Investment Fund program could help them succeed. So it's kind of, it fits into a continuum of other things that we can do.
Mr. Chairman, is the new Job Z green for 2013 also, or is that immediately?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that would occur immediately. So that those exemptions would be in the 10-11.
And do we have an estimate of what the cost on that is? Or?
We do. That would be, I think the proposal was, the estimate was $3.6 million in the first year and $6.6 in the second year. That's based on an estimate of 5 projects in the first year and 10 in the second year.
And, Mr. Chairman, was that calculated into the $4.8 billion deficit, or is that up and above it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I couldn't say for sure.
Just quickly, because we're going to try and give Senator Saltzman and Representative Winkler 20 minutes.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment. As someone who has listened to these proposals last year and now the new ones coming forward this year, hopefully, in terms of looking at the differences across them and the areas there are differences, I am finding it difficult to get a grasp of the analytic evidence for one version versus another. And I would just make a comment to the chairs, to the authors of the bills, and to the stakeholders who are involved in developing the proposals, is that really to make a decision going forward that's other than political or symbolic or budgetary, I would like some evidence, some analytic evidence on various features of these proposals and their effectiveness. What people talk about evidence in other states, I'd like to see it and hear it on these different features and why one has more merit than the other, either the maximum limits or the funding requirements or the fund diversification requirements, which are the ones where most of the differences appear. But we need these are some big decisions about going forward with prosperity our state, and we need better information, in my view, about the relative merits of some of these features and proposals.
I'd just like to piggyback on Representative Bunn's remarks. First of all, we welcome the governor and the administration on board here, and we need your encouragement and help in this. And these are things that I believe we can work out, and I think it should be worked out in the next 3-4 weeks. And it's not rocket science. We can put these parts of the puzzle together and get the roadmap going, and I would encourage the administration to work with these folks. Again, these jobs issues aren't Republican job issues. They're DFL job issues. They're the people's issues. And we got to put aside who gets credit, rah, rah, rah. Let's get the job done. Let's work on this together. And at the end of the day, we don't need anybody standing up and saying, I did it, or, you know, we all did it. And with your leadership, administration, and the members here, let's get these parts put together, okay, and agree. Not 3 months from now, but soon, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney and Senator Saltzman. I am going to look at my agenda here. And
thank you.
Ask Representative Winkler to join Senator Saltzman at the table, and we'll just keep we may shuffle some chairs here with Mr. Loftus and Mr. And Representative Winkler, but all of you stay at the table. Thank you. It sounds like you have a PowerPoint, if I remember right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I thought if we were presenting to a business audience, we might as well speak their language.
So you're going to leave me out.
Leave us out.
You can interpret that as you'd like, Mr. Chair. My name is Ryan Winkler. We introduced ourselves earlier, I guess, but I serve with Representative Mahoney, under Representative Mahoney, on the Bioscience and Emerging Technology Committee. This morning, in my real life, I should be at a high-tech startup company where I work. In fact, right now I'm skipping a meeting on our priorities for December so that we can get revenue in the door and continue to make payroll, which is the ongoing challenge of a company like ours. We work in the software industry, and we're atypical from all of the stories that we hear because we have had about $7 million in angel money come into our company because there is no VC money interested in what we do, but we fortunately have an ongoing series of people who've been willing to put cash in the company and are still doing so. And so this is a topic and a world that I live in when I work at a real job every single day. This has been rebranded the Minnesota Business Investment Act. It used to be called Small Business, but that's really not, I don't think, an accurate statement because it is not about a dry cleaner or a hardware store on Main Street. It's about emerging businesses that are going to grow high-tech jobs. Just to give some basics on the purpose and goals of this MNBIA, the goal is to increase the amount of early stage and growth funding for Minnesota businesses. The mechanism for doing this sounds strange, but actually makes a lot of sense and is well supported by experience in other states. Insurance companies are required to have big reserve pools to cover claims. That means that they have big pools of capital that they invest. Those investment pools or funds are tightly regulated, and they have to have a balanced, diverse portfolio like any other well-managed fund would, including a certain portion of which goes into high-risk investments, venture capital. Basically, what this bill does is give a credit on their premium tax to those insurance companies if they are willing to invest that portion of their portfolio that's high-risk into high-risk in Minnesota. as opposed to sending it out across the country. So the advantage that this program has is that you're actually capturing capital that would be flowing out of Minnesota to other states and holding it here and putting it into companies that need it for all the reasons that we've already heard this morning. The target is 40 to 60 companies funded over 10 years. And it's important to explain how this works. Basically, venture capital funds come to the insurance companies with the big pools of capital, and they market a fund to them. They say, if you take this credit and invest your money with us, we'll put our own venture capital money together with yours, and then we will go out and find these companies in Minnesota to invest in. And so they have to create new funds in Minnesota that are out looking for new companies to invest in over 10 years. And I think a key point, and I'm sure Representative Bunn will be interested in this, in the support and analytics behind this, but the increased economic activity that are generated by these investments actually exceed the cost of the program throughout its whole life cycle, and that includes the opportunity cost. So if we were spending that dollar somewhere else, what would be the return in the economy? And based on 90 years of evidence, they actually include the opportunity costs of spending that money elsewhere when they say that the benefits exceed the cost. There we go. A brief outline, pictorial, of how this works. Explains basically that the insurance companies invest in these certified funds. The certified funds review business plans and invest in 30 to 40 companies with the size of this program. And then the companies prove out their technology and grow or fail depending on how well they do. Further summary, the state actually, the role for DEED in this bill is to certify that these funds have experience in the market and are well positioned to make good decisions. And in some states, that has not gone. They haven't had these tight requirements, and so in some states, the program has not been successful because of that. However, in several states where they've had the benefit of learning from 10 years of doing this, they've tightened the requirements, and they've had tremendous success. This, again, just goes through how it works. There's a requirement for how quickly that money has to get out the door, so they can't just sit and wait for 5 years before they invest it. They actually have to get it out quickly and collect the premium tax credit in future years. Covers that. Here is the money that comes out. You're looking at premium tax credits in 2013 through 2016. The House bill, and we'll talk to the Senate about this, but because creating a tax credit that future legislatures would be bound to pay for is questionable public policy, the House bill will be amended to include a phase-out of tax expenditures that we have in law already to offset that amount. So basically, we'll have something written in law that will balance this out on the budget in those out years unless it's played with. If you've ever looked at the tax expenditure study, you will see that there are billions and billions of dollars that the state spends every year by making exceptions to the tax code. So the 2009 and 2010, which I think is highly relevant in this economy, we're looking at $80 million over those 2 years coming into Minnesota's economy for high-tech businesses primarily. And the economic impact, as you can see, grows over time up to, and this is not cumulative, this is year over year. In 2018, you're looking at a $240 million economic impact from this program, which is significant. So as you know, we have an economic crisis now. One of the challenges, according to the economists, are that we don't have any industries that look like they're going to help lead us out. The traditional strong points for this state are weak. And so one of the advantages of this program is that it helps fund the tech sector to drive the economy out of, you know, even past 2009, 2010, to drive the economy forward and really move out of the recession at a more, hopefully, accelerated pace. This shows the revenue impact, tax dollars coming into the state based on the promise of the future tax credit. And Julie, this is the one that actually accounts for the opportunity cost. So if we spent that same dollar somewhere else in typical state spending, that number that top line that you see actually takes the opportunity cost out, which I think is important because one of the criteria in economic development that we need to really remember is that every dollar that we spend in a tax credit or for a subsidy is a dollar that we are either taxing somebody else for or that we are not spending somewhere else. And so if we don't look at the what we're giving up on the other side of this, if we only look at one side of the ledger, we are not getting a true estimate or an understanding of what impact the investment has. And I think that's, I assumed originally that this did not include the opportunity cost of those dollars not going elsewhere, but it does, and I can get you the analytics on it. This is an example of what happened in Wisconsin. It looks as, and this is Don and Dale, you might like this. The vast majority of it ends up going into biotech, so it goes right into the heart of the kinds of industries that this conference is all about. Manufacturing, IT, and communications are the bulk of it. So we're not talking about a car wash in Chisholm that is going to get funded, but it might be.
Why not?
Because the jobs don't pay as well in the car wash. But we're talking about companies that are primarily going to be paying people who have demand a high price in the market. So the kinds of industries that this program helps are the ones that are generating high-paying jobs, and it's going to be, and it would be all over the state. Here's experience in other states. Texas, I think, is interesting. They've done $400 million. They've done this two times. $52 million was invested in the first 12 months, $100 million in the first 26 months. 11 venture capital firms participating. Wisconsin has a $50 million program, and there 34% of all the funding goes to the biotech sector. And so we're looking at 1,300 jobs and 16 new companies still operating in Wisconsin. It's a significant boost to our economy. So that's the PowerPoint. Now we don't have to see the tops of heads over there. The program last year was $100 million. We've redrafted the bill and to be a $200 million program, and it changes the size of the tax credit in the out years, but again, there's plenty of room in the tax code to find ways to offset those tax credit expenditures, and so that will be part of the solution. And we are assured by the venture capital community that there's more than enough opportunity to find $200 million worth of deals in the state of Minnesota.
Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just to add a few things, excellent presentation is that if you research a CABCO program, you're going to see states where there have been issues. And so this bill really deals with some of the concerns that have come up, to really be very specific on how the investment managers, that they don't receive any of their investment that until they have invested all of the funds. So that's very, very important to note. Also capped of how much of a management fee they have. So the other thing is that, again, we look at where other states have used this for other purposes. And, again, I go back to Minnesota where we are still a leader in research and innovation. And this is a way to bring those ideas to really the marketplace. And how do we assist our businesses? So I think that we are looking at what other states have done, learn from their mistakes, and learn from where they've been most successful. Obviously, it's an issue that people will have very different opinions on. It's how it's crafted. I think we, again, look at the history of this program and that it's important for us to be a player in that.
Loftus, do you have some remarks on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Very similar to the concepts we've been working with as well. Obviously different in size of the state credit, tax credit. Our proposal is $60 million against, or 60% against $100 million of investment. So a little difference there. I appreciate the proposal's inclusion of deed as a certification of these companies to be qualified to manage the funds. There are other nuances of this that I think we probably should work on, including issues that you've talked about with the management fees, making sure that that's capped, and that the companies fully invest all of the funds, all of those insurance company monies, before they take any proceeds beyond their management fees. That's an important way to assure that the program costs, the funds go into the right place. And also there may be opportunity here for the state to capture some of the excess return on the investments beyond a certain rate of return. And I'm not sure if your proposal includes that, Representative Winkler, but I think the industry has talked about that as well. So beyond a certain return, maybe the state could benefit as well. So,
I don't know if this person is here.
Actually, I have one of the person, Michael Korngold.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a question.
We were just going to call for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Winkler, do you believe that this program, and have you seen in other states, will alter the trend of the venture capitalists not willing to invest early?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, I don't know that it will change the goal of this program and where it has worked is in the $3 million and up range, which takes about half of the so-called valley of death, which is the trouble getting funding between $500,000 to $5 million. I was also an author of the Angel Investment Tax Credit bill last session and believe in both approaches. And in fact, I think if you combine them, you have a program that helps target investment in early stage, very early stage companies, and helps to target investment as those companies need to grow and find access to bigger capital pools. So the $3 million range and up targets about half that valley of death, and the angel investment tax credit would do the rest. I don't think you're going to change the culture or the kind of the institutional nature of a lot of the money that we have in this state. And one of the interesting things I think about this program is that you're going to be looking at venture capital firms. Again, they have to bring some of their own money to the table to do this, coming from around the country to Minnesota and setting up shop, so that we're actually going to be broadening our base of capital and broadening people's awareness of what Minnesota has to offer for deals to fund.
So just another point to that, Mr. Chair, is that there's also been some discussion of that should some of these funds be dedicated to like, university research. So that's something that's up for discussion as well, of how can they also benefit from this. So I would like to work with Rosa Winkler on how we might do that. Would that be important to this program moving forward?
Representative Bunn had a question.
Mr. Chair, and to any of the panelists who'd like to respond to this, the two areas of distinction between the proposals so far appear to be the total amount of investment by the state, $100 million versus $200 million, and also the percentage of the tax credit, 60 versus 80. Could either any of you shed some light on how will we arrive at a $100 million or $200 million, other than being arbitrary? And secondly, the merits of different magnitudes of the tax credit.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bunn, I'll start with the leverage or the amount of the tax credit, if you will. There's certainly a trade-off. I think somewhere between 60 and 80% based on experience is the likely range where insurance companies are going to be interested enough to do this to actually put their money on the line. And if you provide a credit that's closer to 80%, you're much more likely to get them to do it. Otherwise, you may have this program in place and see it be underutilized. I personally think that I would rather be sure that money is coming in right away by raising the size of the credit. And I also think that expanding the size of it from $1 to $200 million increases its direct economic impact now. And I think that's an important component of what we're looking at. And finally, I think it's relatively... it may be politically challenging to pay for it when you look at the carve-outs that we have in the tax code to get people to agree that they should give up their little exception in order to fund something that's good for the state as a whole. But with these budget and economic times, we've heard often as legislators that there is an opportunity to change the way we do things now because of the magnitude of the crisis. And so that's the opportunity that we hope to take advantage of.
And just follow up, Mr. Chair and Representative Bunn, is that some of this is looking at what other states are doing and their experience with this. So I guess building on that and starting at that point, I know in Texas that they have a 100% look at the data, but then you have to also consider reality and how can we make this work within our state. It's also where's the capital? And so there is a number of different factors here. Certainly Wisconsin is trying to expand their angel investor tax credit. That would be a wonderful thing to do here, but again, looking at our resources, trying to create some balance, and also seeking stakeholder input. I mean, that's why we're here today to, ask questions, but also to get feedback from people of what they are comfortable with and where they think that we really should be headed in terms of our specific priorities.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bunn, I would agree with Senator Saltzman that that this is part of a dialogue process that we're going through, examining what will work, you know, whether it's 60% credit or 80% credit or 75. I don't think any of us know for sure what it will take to induce that, and I think probably our 60% is on the low range of what other states have done. Certainly the 100% proposal last year is probably not necessary, but we're open to considering what the best number will be, and I'm hearing from the industry and people like Mr. Cassidy, perhaps, who can shed light on their perspective would be helpful.
Just one more point, Mr. Chair, if I might. You know, again, if we have a package here, and we're looking at the Angel Investor Network, we're looking at this this pool of funds, and then there's also the federal money, and that's where the Office of Science and Technology has been really helpful in that how are we also accessing the federal money. So we're looking at different pools of dollars. There's just not one silver bullet here to say, if we do this program, this is going to solve the issue. You know, different companies qualify for different programs, different pots of money are available. So this is really creating sort of a larger funding program to address this. And then there's many other issues beyond this. This particularly looks to the seed money and startup funds.
I think Representative Norton had a question.
More of a comment and then a little bit of a question, but not to one of the testifiers, to one of the people around the table here, if I might. I noticed nanotechnology is listed. It was not part of Representative Dabney's bill, although Senator Saltzman, I think, was on both of those. So maybe she can address whether nano is included in the angel investors. I've taken some time this summer to attend a couple of the nano conferences, and there seems to be a lot of development and potential, commercial development and potential in that particular area. And I know my question would be to Representative Beard, who carried a nanotechnology bill last year, and perhaps to the testifiers as well, as to whether these two proposals currently on the table will envelop the intent of Representative Beard's legislation last year, or if that's something we should continue to look at, if you have any comments on that.
Ms. Chairman. Mr. Representative Beard.
Just to refresh our memory, I'm looking for my favorite game of the lobbyists that was here back there. Oh, there you are.
Representative Beard and Representative Norton, if I might just jump in a little bit here, and we're closing in on the end of time here. Nanotechnology and the microscopes and the equipment that you spoke to really are something that could really be better suited or better used in our technical training facilities, our workforce, and somehow or another figure out a way to share that equipment with business. We have that working over at St. Paul Technical College. We did that a couple of years ago, and it's just getting ready. I think St. Cloud is making some concerns. Dakota County Technical College is making some statements. I don't see why we wouldn't have, with our technical college system, the ability to do a public-private partnership in those type schools, whether it's in Hibbing or Brooklyn Park or St. Cloud or Rochester or wherever, but you certainly can kick that around a bit. You know, we are supposed to be done at 10. I certainly, if we have other questions, we should probably extend this a little bit or other comments. Otherwise, there's a gentleman in the back. Would you like to come to the table and we'll kick one of these people out and get you a seat.
Thank you.
morning. Please identify yourself
Chairman,
on the tape.
Legislators. My name is Steve Marcille. I'm the CEO of Rainsource Capital. We're kind of known as the Angel Capital guys. We've organized and managed more angel groups than anyone in the country. We have 23 groups in six states, representing 450 investors, about $20 million committed to small funds, another $20 million that gets put in side by side by those individuals. We also manage a small little venture capital fund, and we're also a partner in a later stage fund. So we're along the continuum. And I want to comment on the angel capital tax credit. And I'm also the treasurer of a national organization, the Angel Capital Association, which is a group that was put together across the country, originally organized with some help from the Kauffman Foundation, to encourage the formation of groups. There's about 150 or so angel groups that are members of that association, and we try to make angel investing more relevant and get more people involved and educate angels on how to do angel investing. What I wanted to talk about here is a couple things that were commented on. I've been involved in this legislation for quite some time, had lots of good discussions, and it's certainly evolved. There was discussion here about location and regions and things like that. And I would like to tell you that I favor this kind of regional approach. I think place matters. I think if you can get groups formed around the state of Minnesota, it's to your advantage. And the reason I say that is there's golden nuggets in the backyards everywhere, and we have to go find those golden nuggets. And in order to do that, you have to have people out there looking. And so by being able to place this around the state, I think that's important. The other element, though, that's also important then is to allow the capital that gets formed by these groups to flow among regions. Let me give you an example. We have an investment in a medical device company. It's got FDA approval. It's in Parker's Prairie. $15 million has been raised by that company. Wouldn't be in Parker's Prairie if it wasn't for angel investors. We have at least nine angel groups involved in that. Some of those angel groups aren't even from this state, but lots of them are. And the reason they've been able to be successful is they've been able to attract angel investment from amongst different groups. And in fact, one of our strategic goals, because it takes a lot of capital to get a company off the ground, is to be able to leverage expertise and funds among the groups, because no one group probably has sufficient capital to really grow the business, and many of the groups don't have all the mentoring talent to also help that business. So I think what you want to focus on is being able to let that capital flow. I think if anything, given the current state of the economy and what's going on in the marketplace with lending and equity, we might want to revisit the equity limits on these things that you place into a company. I think you're right. It's going to take more equity, and it's going to take longer probably to get things off the ground, because the equity capital in the banking markets aren't functioning the way they used to, and they're probably not going to function the way they used to ever again. So I think we're going to see more need for more local capital. So we might want to revisit that. I think we might want to, again, be a little bit more flexible on the types of firms. It's probably more important what you say you won't invest in than what you will invest in, because today we're talking about green technology, and last year it was, or a few years ago, it was more about biotechnology. 5 years from now, it will be something else. So I think being able to be flexible is important. And then the last thing I want to do is caution you a little bit about expectations. These programs are all designed to look at high growth companies, and they are very difficult to build, and they take a lot of time. And what we're really doing by these programs and getting people to understand what it takes to grow a high-valued firm is educating people on both sides of the equation. We spend a lot of time educating our angel investors on what it takes, and a lot of time educating entrepreneurs. And I can tell you that 90% of the people that walk in the door looking for money won't get it from any one of these programs. And they'll all complain to you. But in that process, what we're doing is we're teaching people how to raise the bar so we get better at this. And the more you do this, the better you get. As an investor, the better you get at finding deals in the backyard, and the better you get at mentoring those deals. And we have to learn how to do that better. And the better the entrepreneurs get at understanding what they need to do to really create a high-valued company that can really make a difference to them, to their employees, to their communities, to their regions and the state. And last, I'd say that don't be short-sighted on the amount of resources. You obviously have to be careful with your tax policies in your being diligent in how you're looking at that. But what Minnesota's been really good at in the past is proving how things work, but never funding things long enough to make a difference. And we have to get out of that trap. We have to be committed for the long run. We have to not only show that these work, we have to stay with them, because this is a 10, 15, 20-year game that we play. And it's a tough, tough game. But what's happened in this country is we've been really great at aggregating large amounts of capital, and we have not been able to, and that's like frozen. And what we need to do is get some of that capital forming from the grassroots up, because development happens. It's a kind of a do-it-yourself proposition, and it happens where you do it yourself. And that's what these programs are designed to do, is get people out there looking in their own backyards, trying to find good opportunities and really working with people and taking the risks. So thank you for your time. If you have any questions, go ahead.
Well, I hope you're going to be around, and I hope you have your card with you, because unfortunately, you know, we're supposed to be done at about 15, 20 minutes ago. And that's pretty common when we get in items like this that are really so important to the future of the state. We are we're in a real bind as a state, as a nation, and we have to, as leaders, look for the solutions that will get us out of it. I will finish with one comment that, you know, we've talked about green jobs, we've talked about high-tech, biotech, tech jobs. Frankly, members, I hope we as a legislature try to take it upon ourselves to start looking at this as knowledge-based economic development, because that broadens the scope that we can work within. Green jobs are what we are, knowledge jobs, bio jobs, pharma jobs, they're all knowledge-based. And even mineral resources are knowledge-based jobs now, because we have to do more with less. Members, I really appreciate you all joining us here, members of the audience and the committee. And the presenters, thank you very, very much. And with that, I'll bring this committee to a close.